Will, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 8th of July. Very nice to have you with us. It is a good day. Hopefully you had all a lovely weekend, and it was a holiday weekend for some, and hopefully you had a good time, and it's back, and here we are, and all is good. Let's check in with everybody and see how things are going. We're going to go through a whole bunch of news stories today. We welcome your thoughts, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Libby Post is here. She is a political consultant, a Monday regular, and our dear friend. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you very much for being here. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo joins us. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
You were going to say more.
Happy to be here. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah.
Could you sound any more
blah,
excited
blah,
about
blah,
it?
Blah, blah, blah. I'm happy to be here. Can we please get on with it? I have a lot to talk about.
Niceties.
I have things to do.
Get the niceties out of the way.
Right. Albany Law School professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration Law Clinic, is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great.
Excellent.
Long holiday weekend for me. So.
Very nice. I hope you enjoyed it. And WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Hello, Joe. How you doing?
I'm well. Good to have you, and we are here, and we welcome your thoughts and comments, panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's get to stuff. We have, you're going to be answering a lot of questions today, Sarah. We have a lot of, we have a lot of immigration border stuff today. Do you want to start about women's soccer?
Yes.
Okay.
Equal pay.
All right.
Equal pay.
The U.S. wins World Cup with a final four-star performance. It happened yesterday. For 4 years, the jersey worn by U.S. women's national soccer team has featured three blue stars above the logo, signifying the World Cup championships won across almost three decades. Now they have a fourth. On Sunday, as the players danced and hugged amid confetti and celebration following a 2-0 victory over the Netherlands, they were handed new shirts made especially for the occasion. It was quite a day. There was a lot of course, they won, which was awesome. And then on...
And in spectacular fashion, may we add?
Yes.
In spectacular, it was a blowout.
Was it not even close?
No,
right.
It was a very definitive win, I believe, as they say in the sports world, a world I certainly am not part of. And it was a really good team and amazing. So then there's this uproar in the entire stadium where people start saying equal pay,
right.
Equal pay, equal pay. And it became very political very quickly, which is quite interesting.
That's also due to the team, some of the members of the team. I'm in awe of them. I think that Megan Rapinoe, I called her the AOC of the sports world. She, unlike Tom Brady, is a fantastic athlete who does not like Trump and has been vocal about it. So, of course, I like her for that. But her valid point is that women athletes have been discriminated against for years, and there's no reason for this. They bring in more money than the men, according to the Wall Street Journal reporting. They play fabulously, and unlike criticism that Trump leveled against them last week, they did finish the job.
I know.
So,
I mean, he was...
So, come on. But, you know, Libby, we have to give him credit. He did bite it yesterday and sent them a very nice congratulatory note, which he should have done as president, and he actually did it.
And I hope they still don't go to the White
Me
House.
Me too.
That's all.
What is the difference between the... What is the pay disparity? Anyone
it's
know?
Very small. It's like, for men, it's like 50.9 billion and
million.
And for women it's I'm sorry, I've got it reversed. The women had 50.8 and the men 49.8. So it's small, but it's the same. And the difference in the prize money is, even with a big increase, 60 million for women, and for men 440 million.
So what you're saying, your first number that you gave was the amount that
they bring in.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So they bring in more revenue,
right,
and yet they get paid less.
Yeah, much less.
When you're a man and you make just for making the team, the World Cup team, if you're a guy, you make $68,750. If you're
a woman,
$15,000.
Yeah.
That's it.
And the prize money for women, for the players for the championship game, for the women, I think it was between $200,000 and $250,000 per player. For the men, it's $1.1 million per player.
And may I point out that the men suck. They That's didn't right. even qualify this year.
They do.
Right. I mean,
oh, and by the way, the men suck.
No, that's an important point because Trump keeps saying, hey, they have to finish the job. They have to win if they want to make an argument for equal pay. I am pointing out, as Megan did, we did it.
Right. They won.
So start
and that's
paying.
It. And, you know, even when they play an exhibition game, because they play 20 exhibition games a year, the men get paid $17,625, and the women get $1,350.
Yeah,
I mean, $1,350.
But they
my
bring,
mortgage payment.
But they bring in more.
Yes,
they bring
they
in
do.
Much more.
And they win.
And we assume, and I did not see this in my reading of it, of what they bring in revenue for all the stuff. You know, jerseys and all that and the market and all that other because my understanding initially was that they sell a lot more stuff because it's a winning team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Winning teams sell.
Yeah. The
right.
women's soccer jersey, I believe I saw it was now like broke the record for Nike in terms of the number of jerseys shipped out. It's now like the number one right. jersey on order. So.
So
they,
I mean,
they
all
sell
the
stuff.
All the arguments against equality have now been flushed down the toilet, and so it'll be very interesting, I think, to see what happens next.
So, who makes the change? How do you make the change?
FIFA has to
right.
do it.
And when he walked in, when the president of FIFA walked into the stadium, he got booed.
Yeah,
it was really, really
Megan
something.
Megan supported the booing.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
her.
I mean, she's great. She's great. And you know, I have to say, I'm quelling here a little bit, which means, you know, I'm very proud in Yiddish. She's a lesbian. She's out. She's got lavender hair. Her girlfriend, her fiance, I don't know if they're married yet. Is a major star in the women's NBA.
NBA.
I mean, you know, they are great role models for every single little girl, not to become lesbian, so nobody get upset out there in radio land that I'm saying they're great role models for that, although they are.
But they're great athletes.
But they're great athletes, and they're great role models for little girls who want to play, who think they can do it, and now they see they can do it. Right. And that's what's so important.
And the idea that when they were crowing with pride and patting each other and throwing each other up in the air and congratulations, that sort of team spirit and pride and confidence was criticized just speaks volumes about the right. state of women in this country.
The idea that because they beat Thailand 13-0 or 13-1 in the first round of the games, that they got criticized for keeping on scoring. Would any men's team ever get criticized?
No.
You know, would the New York Giants be criticized if they scored that much? No. Would the Mets? No. We'd be thrilled if that happened.
You would expect it. That's what
right.
a team does. You go out and you play the best you can.
And
all
you score.
Teams. It's not gender.
So let me ask this question. But we're all talking about it this morning. Do you think it'll
yep.
help?
Yes. Yes, that's why I love her.
Okay. All right, good.
Yeah. And she's bringing attention to criminal justice issues, too, with her brother. She wished him happy birthday at the end,
yeah,
Megan. And her brother has spent half of his incarcerated time in solitary and has quite a backstory. ESPN did a really great profile on the two of them. He actually taught her and her younger sister, she comes from like a family of five or six,
yeah.
how to play soccer in their backyard and, you know, sort of fell under the opioid crisis before we knew what that was and has spent a significant amount of time incarcerated and is now in a program, an innovative program to reenter society with a degree of some sort. And so
maybe
that's,
Kim Kardashian can take on his cause.
Yeah, you think?
Bless her heart.
And away we
very
go.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a really good point, though, Sarah. That's true. Yeah.
So let's... all good with that?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank
all right.
You
got it out.
All right.
Got it out of our system.
That's
yeah.
fine. That's fine. I
women
it's
are
very
happy.
Exciting. It's very exciting. That and Coco.
Oh.
Wimbledon.
Huh?
Wimbledon.
Oh yeah, yeah. The 15-year-old.
Oh, right.
The 15-year-old
right.
unseated
right.
Venus.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And
okay.
she keeps going.
And she keeps
too.
Going.
Yeah.
And
she's
was,
advancing.
She
yeah.
she just came back from like the largest margin in the losing column. And
right.
she came back and won anyway. So she's got all this cool and aplomb. And it's really interesting why they think a teenager is prevailing again. That used to happen when I was a kid. It was all teenagers
yes.
playing.
Yeah.
And then the bigger women came in and it was all about technology and diet and the speed of the ball and all this stuff, math that they did. So teenagers have not had a chance to compete in this way or to show off in this way. So it's a really interesting story.
We'll follow that one too. Excellent. All right, let's talk about the citizen question and the census. This was obviously addressed on Friday, but we'll talk about it because the Justice Department announced on Sunday that it was replacing the legal team defending the Trump administration's effort to place a citizenship question on the next census, a change that is all but unprecedented in legal battles as consequential as the one over the 2020 headcount. The department said in a statement that it was, quote, shifting these matters to a new team of civil division lawyers going forward. It offered no explanation for the en masse change, which came on the heels of an extraordinary week and a year-long clash over the issue that has raised concerns about whether the department's arguments for adding the question could be believed. So it was, we're going to put the question on, and then the court says, no, you're not, and then they said, we're going to fight it, and then they said, okay, we're not going to fight it, and we're going to print these, and then they're printed, and then, oh, no, we're not going to print these, and it's not going to be on. Alan, what do you make of it?
Well, look, we know what this is. This president is trying to get votes in an election that is going to be very close and that he is underwater in right now. So they go to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says, no, you can't do that. And now, of course, we see that he keeps on keeping on. Why? Because he knows that every time he talks about it, somebody who would answer the door normally is not going to answer the door, giving the advantage to Team Republican. It's that simple.
Well, he said over the weekend on the record that this was about redistricting.
Right.
and making...
And the Republicans.
Yeah. I mean,
the very argument that they said they were not making when they in court because the Democrats and those opposing accuse them of saying, well, this is redistricting. And they said, no, this is not redistricting. And then the president said, this is about redistricting.
Yeah. Yeah. And Roberts even called him out when he joined the majority and wrote for the majority in the opinion and said, we don't have the luxury of being naive.
Yeah, except that they threw out the gerrymandering cases.
That's true.
Yeah. Sarah, what do you make of Roberts in all of this?
I think we're all trying to figure out what to make of Roberts. I think he'll be one of the more closely watched justices, at least as long as Trump is in office, because he's become more important than I think we thought when he was appointed.
Well, the way I make it, for whatever it's worth, is that these guys, that this president, this Chief Justice wants to keep the court with some air of legitimacy. That's what he wants. And on the gerrymandering case, he certainly went wrong. We know that. And that was the important one to them. So now on this one, he says, well, we'll throw him one. That's my bet.
No, I think that's right.
He didn't even throw him. He didn't even throw him one. The Supreme Court left open exactly the loophole that Trump is exploiting to come back with another explanation. I think it's really telling that the lawyers from the Justice Department are all saying, we're not dealing with this, because they perhaps have some integrity left and are not going to go in and make a deliberate lie. But you think about it, I think the census is still effed up. First of all the continuing publicity is still going to make anybody afraid to fill out that census.
Absolutely
more
right. Yeah.
Second, even if the court does what I hope it will and say, this is all baloney, you guys are still lying, we reject it, then they appeal, it goes up to the Supreme Court. We have a Supreme Court that is dedicated, Roberts all and all, to increasing the power of the executive. And Trump can easily come out with an executive order and put that question in. I think the census is messed with.
And I think the damage is done.
Yeah, I agree.
The damage is done.
Well, and we can't rest until October 31st, which is the real deadline, apparently, for that the Commerce Department has said that with extraordinary resources, they could pull it off by October 31st.
But still, the fact that this president keeps saying, basically, don't answer the door or ICE will find you, because that's what this is all about, makes this so reprehensible.
And we have another story that we might be talking about today, that the ICE has been using the Department of Motor Vehicle Records.
DMV records,
Yeah, in Utah and Vermont, where they have, and New York now will soon be among this, that you can be a illegal, I can't say alien anymore, sorry, illegal immigrant in this country and still get a driver's license. I know Sarah will fix me.
Fix her, Sarah. Right.
Undocumented.
Right. Yeah, undocumented. That's it. That's undocumented. An undocumented yeah. person.
Well, we will get into that. But, to Alan's point, if we where are we, do you think, on the citizenship question? Because this keeps on bouncing back and forth of to the crux of this particular story, which is about the new legal team. What would that indicate?
It seems to me that he either fired the old team because mm-hmm. they were it was mortifying to read through the transcript yes. of those
You're
oral
fired.
Arguments. Yeah, exactly. Either that or they raised a moral objection. You know, we or a legal one. We can't argue what you want us to argue. It's not in the Constitution. We can't do it.
And God, so I wish it was that one. Yeah, I want it to be that one.
I do too.
Nah. They screwed it up in his mind. They screwed it up. Fire him. Yeah. It's that simple.
Well, yeah. I mean, but these were lifelong, career Justice Department
15
lawyers,
years in.
Right, who have served under many different presidents mm-hmm. and try to keep it as unpolitical as they want to keep it as unpolitical as possible, and they can't take it anymore. No. And so many of them have resigned. I mean, they just their integrity. Yeah. They want to maintain their integrity.
Come on. That's your projection. What happened is they were doing the wrong thing. They were arguing the wrong thing. They messed it up in Trump's mind. Fire them. You're
that's
fired.
In Trump's mind. Absolutely, Alan. It's in Trump's mind that because they didn't win what he wanted them to win, then they're incompetent.
Well, then they're fired.
The case right. is right. now in the Justice Department's Civil Division, which is headed by Jeff Sessions' former chief of staff. And Rachel Maddow made the point that this is a guy who watched clearly what happens when you don't do what the president wants.
Right, exactly.
You are not just pushed out of office, but you're humiliated and taken down, tortured, really, for months. And so he's going to do whatever Trump wants. And I think we're already beginning to see that.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to discuss, all kinds of cool things, and cool meaning juicy and newsy, but
not really
not
cool.
Not cool and really depressing.
And hip.
Right. We'll get to that right after this. We've said this many times in this program that we can talk about all kinds of horrible issues. We can talk about things of children and abuses and what people write about is the mispronunciation of FIFA. Not FIFA.
FIFA. I've only read it, not heard it. Sorry.
Yeah, it's FIFA. That's all right.
I'm
That's
not
right.
a radio person.
So that takes care of half the letters.
No. Okay. Oh, jeez. Right. So all my brilliant words got down to mispronouncing FIFA.
That's right. That's right. But it's okay. We have letters. Let's go to those, and then we'll move on. I'm gonna take out the FIFA letters. And here we go. We go to Sadie, who says, as I remind my grandchildren frequently, winning the game is not the most important thing. An assist is as important as a goal. It's how well they play as a team. Oh, wait, the U.S. women's team has that covered. Equal pay.
Yay.
Agree.
George says, there shouldn't even be a question about equal pay if the women bring in the same or more revenue than the men. That's just science. Economics. Who plays the women soccer players anyway? Eric, our good friend, says, good morning, panel. When people ask what good does government do, we might point to Title IX being responsible for the U.S. women's soccer team's success in creating a platform for the equal pay movement. Tony.
Hear, hear.
Tony says, as the father of two daughters, I applaud the women's national team. It should be noted that in addition to the pay inequity, FIFA scheduled two other championship games for the same slot as the women's game. Second question, part one, can Trump screw up the census? Part two, is the census part of the Constitution, as the census is part of the Constitution, wouldn't such actions be considered impeachable?
I don't know about impeachable offenses, but I can tell you that he can't issue an executive order on the census like he wants to because of the way that the way that it falls in the Constitution. And he does, because it's an administrative function, have to support the policies, the decisions that they're making. Any changes to the census have to be supported with good reason. And he's going to keep fishing for one until he finds one that will appease the court, apparently. And yes, he will continue to mess with it because, as he said, and as I mentioned, this is about votes. And as Alan opened with, it's about the election.
Camille writes, if the citizen question is eventually included on the census, could we as citizens just leave it blank?
Oh, we should not.
Actually, we should all say no, we're not. Just lie on it, I think.
Well, I mean, the real
okay,
problem,
you two have to get together on this.
No,
we're going to start a movement.
We can't lie. No, because what we lie? No, oh, wow. Because what we need the information to be accurate. So what the
No, you don't.
Pish
it's
posh.
Not.
Let me hear Sarah's Whoa. Argument.
Okay, and then
yeah.
Well, because what the advocates are saying, immigrant advocacy organizations, the lead message to their constituency is fill it out truthfully, because if you don't fill it out, or if you fill it out with inaccurate information, it could make the problem worse.
Yeah, right. Okay, so if I'm an immigrant, I'm not going to fill it out accurately when I see what ICE is doing. It's going to totally be used to go after them.
Absolutely.
And the rest of us need to support them in some way, perhaps by all of us not answering. But as Alan and I have been arguing, the real damage is done, because if I were an immigrant right now, I would stay so far away from that census form.
Absolutely.
So advocacy groups, tell the truth. That's what they have to say. But not when your family's about to be deported for it.
And by the way, as to ignoring, if I heard it right, the idea of ignoring the census, that is so self-defeating, because your state is awarded its congressman and congresspersons based on whether or not you have enough people. And New York will, of course, lose something else again this year because people are moving to the Sun States. No, you can't do that.
I mean, another way to support the census effort is to sign up to be one of the boots on the ground, and to make sure that we have good people in those positions. Because what it really comes down to is the discretion of those individuals and some training. And another thing that advocacy groups are doing is they're equipping their constituencies with best practices around this, aside from telling the truth, which everyone should do, but also knowing your rights in order to fend off any improper use of the census for enforcement.
Oh, wow. Again, that sounds like such do-gooder stuff to me. I'm sorry. People are in danger in this administration, and answering that census question, it's the right thing to fill out the truth. No.
The other part of this is though, even if he loses, which he might, right? This is about shoring up his base. This is red meat for his base. They love to hear it. And then if he does lose, he can bring out the whole, it was rigged, and the deep state argument.
Which he's doing right now. He's doing all the rigging.
Yeah.
And that is what is so pathetic about all of this. He yells about other people rigging, and yet this is one big effort to rig this election.
That's what fascism is about.
That's right.
Do we all right, let's move just to the other issue that we were talking about.
Joe,
go ahead.
Something's puzzling me. I want to go back to this discussion we had right now. If he loses, we have said, so he loses. He's still indicating to everybody that if you fill this thing out, you're in danger. Yep. So even if he, quote, loses, he still wins.
Yep.
And that feeds perfectly into this next topic, which is also the using of these, which we alluded to earlier, of the state driver's license photos are this gold mine for ICE agents and the FBI for facial recognition searches. Record share with the Washington Post revealed that agents are scanning millions of Americans' faces without their knowledge or consent. How are they allowed to do that? Anyone?
So they're not allowed. They just do it.
They just do it. Look, I just went and had, I had to go in because I'm old now. And I had to go in and have my picture taken. And it came out, it was so ugly.
They just take your picture because you're old? Is that
you have to go in if you're over 75, I believe.
Oh, you have to update it.
Did you have to take a test, too?
You have to take an eye test, yes.
Oh, but not a driving test.
No. No. Not
Thank
a driving
God,
test.
Right?
Right.
Well, I wouldn't want to take one now.
Yeah,
I
know. Yeah. No. It's okay. But that's the problem. You go in and they take your picture. Now, in my case, I'm just trying to make the point that it's okay because the picture is not representative of my face. At least I think so.
So what you're saying is it doesn't really. They wouldn't be able to find you by looking at this photo.
I looked at the lady and I said, I can't. I'm not going to.
Who's that?
No, there's no good. So they took another one.
You didn't say that's my brother, not me?
Thousands of facial recognition requests, internal documents, and emails over the past 5 years obtained through public records requests by Georgetown law researchers and provided to the Washington Post reveal that federal investigators have turned state departments and motor vehicle databases into the bedrock of an unprecedented surveillance infrastructure. The one thing that caught my attention on this is 5 years, so we're going back to the Obama administration.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff comes out of post 9/11 homeland security concerns and the vast expansion of data sharing among federal and state agencies. Some of it is mandated. We have a lot of people who are trying to figure out exactly the direct link between DCJS, the Division of Criminal Justice Services in New York State, and what information does and does not get shared automatically once somebody's fingerprints are entered into the system. Mm. It's really hard to manage the flow of that information because some of it is so instantaneous given the way that different databases speak to each other. And when our governor said we aren't cooperating with ICE, we aren't cooperating with immigration, he can say that to a point, and he can order the agencies not to share information that they have complete control over, but there's a lot of information that they don't. And the facial recognition stuff, I'm only just starting. I mean, people, it's a whole new, it's a whole new playing field. It's a whole new piece of scholarship among immigration legal analysts and social analysts to figure out the role of technology and sort of technological oversight, especially along the border, but on interior enforcement issues as well.
Well, Sarah, here's the question. You know, I get the immigration part, and I'm certainly with you on that. Guy robs a bank. They get a picture of the guy, and they put it up. And now they're going to facial recognition. Take it out of the immigration. Is there an argument to be made about the utility of facial recognition in apprehending bad guys?
There are many arguments to be made, and in a lot of the cases, what we're finding is it's inaccurate. it doesn't always work the right way, and then you end up with the same problems as other technologies. DNA is a little bit less problematic, but there's entire volumes of legal scholarship about how screwed up the way that technology plays itself out in law enforcement activities. Sometimes it works out well, and when it works, we're happy. But it's an oversized net in a lot of cases, and it ends up trapping a lot of people in the criminal justice system that didn't belong there.
You know, the thing to me as an investigative reporter that gets to me is about the use of Department of Motor Vehicle records. Since there was a murder in California where a stalker, he stalked, that's how he found his victim, but the argument was he went through driver license records. So since that time, those records have been closed to journalists who use them to find things like criminals who are working as school bus drivers and unsafe drivers who are working in public transportation. Those records are closed to journalists, and yet ICE is going in there to use it for law enforcement, suspect law enforcement efforts. And to me, I think that's one of the critical technological problems of our times. The cell phones, we saw that too when the FBI wants to use cell phone records. A direct invasion of privacy, but when a crime is involved, is it justified? And there are no easy answers. You can't say yes or no always. The rule is this. It takes lots of study and thoughtful looking at this. And that's what we don't have in this government.
Well, the other part of this from a social media perspective is that I think the majority of people in the United States think we're already doing it because they see it on TV in all the procedural criminal dramas. You see it on NCIS in all the various iterations.
Mm-hmm,
you saw it on
CSI.
You see it on Law and Order and their iterations. And so people are seeing it and seeing it being used successfully, even though it's a story, you know, but they get the bad guy. And so this seeps into our national subconscious and think, well, what's wrong with it?
Yeah,
because it works.
Well, and I mean, just the passcode to get onto your iPhone, there were a lot of people who who underappreciated the impact of forking over to Apple your facial recognition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
That's what that is. It's
I know
like,
it
here's
is.
My personal image. It's convenient to get into
Microsoft
your phone.
Microsoft, too, to get into my Surface. They look at my face.
They scan your face.
Yep.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning, the 8th of July. We have Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post. Let's go to some letters. This one from Kristen. Dear Rounders.
There's a movie of that name, wasn't
yes,
there?
Yes,
and
it Matt Damon.
Yeah.
It was about gambling.
Yeah, right. I don't gamble.
Okay. I looked at the 2000 census form, says Kristen, and the citizenship question is on it. What's different for 2020?
I looked into this morning, and the citizenship question has been on it in years past. It's always been justified by a legitimate purpose, however. And in most cases, it was limited geographically, and it was only on census forms that were sent to certain foreign-born nationals to track certain information about what the foreign-born population, where it's gone, or where they've, in order to allocate resources accordingly. $800 billion at stake allocated through the census, $73 billion that come to New York.
Wow. So that is why you believe it's important to tell the truth on the census form.
Correct. And we're equipping communities, the entire state of New York is coming around because it's not just immigrant communities. If the count isn't right for communities of color, mm-hmm. they are disproportionately negatively impacted by any loss of funding in the census.
Rosemary.
I understand this. I mean, the census has been the basis for political and monetary representation since the Republic began. However, these are people who are now being asked to fill out a form that could result in the deportation of their family or certainly the disruption of their lives. And that's too much to ask on a form. So my point is, if there were some way to disrupt it, was gross underreporting or lying, they would have to do something. It would be extraordinary.
The financial
but we're not
impact
times.
Is just too great. And here's the thing. Just saying that you're not a citizen on a form does not make you deportable, right? The government still has to find a way. It still has to prove. So, in order for somebody to be deported, essentially, it's the government's burden, and then it shifts to the respondent. But to show that you were born someplace else, that you entered unlawfully, or that your visa that you entered on is expired, and that they have a reason under the law to deport you. So, there's a lot of steps between census information and deportation.
That is all very nice. However, the same thing happened to all of those people in the United States who were complying with ICE rules about reporting on time, not violating any rules, doing exactly what they were told to do, and that was used against them to deport them.
Yep,
and yes, there
are
many
right
steps
now.
There, but it's happening.
And how come in every town and village, including Great Barrington, a big black car rolls up, finds somebody who's been there for 25 years, shoves them in the back, and you never see the guy again, Sarah? That's the question.
You guys are preaching to the choir here. I represent these people. I just had another person picked up at an ICE office last Tuesday, I want to say.
Horrible.
We had to go in on an emergency temporary restraining order the day before the 4th of July holiday. I was in front of a federal judge at the same time those poor Department of Justice lawyers were trying to explain the president's tweet to a federal judge in Maryland. So I get it, but the funding that's at stake it should not be messed with. We need to redirect our resistance energy to protecting our communities in a more fulsome way.
You're an officer of the court, right? You have to say, don't lie and fill out the forms, and it's all important, right? Even though personally you might not do that.
No, I would still do that personally. I've listened a lot to the communities that are most deeply impacted by these issues. And I think that's the only way to proceed on resistance efforts is to listen to these communities and see what would best support them. So I remain open to suggestion if it turns out that what people want us to do is not participate as allies. But that's not the message that we're hearing right now from these communities.
Libby.
Well, What people aren't talking about is, and these are very important issues, that the citizenship question, they've taken off the LGBT question. There used to be in the 2010 census, there was a question asking if you were a member of the LGBTQ community, and that helped with getting funding. That $810 billion in funding that is based on responses to the census.
So my understanding is the new question is, are you asked to define the relationship of same sex or opposite sex? Is that different?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I was under the impression it came out that they took it out.
My understanding, this is, I'm looking this up from, this is from NPR, but for the couples living together will be asked to define the relationship for their partners in a new way, same sex or opposite sex.
That
so
is,
the four options are opposite sex, husband, wife, spouse,
okay, so that's,
opposite sex, unmarried partner, same sex, husband, wife, spouse, or same sex, unmarried partner.
But that's different than asking if you're a member of the LGBT community.
Is.
That's asking about your marital status. And giving them the information they need to do away with marriage equality in the United States.
Okay.
All kinds of scary
different.
Things
yes.
packed into this.
Yeah.
All right, more letters. John says, good morning, panel. As a conservative living in New York State, I have no reason to answer the census, considering the fact that the census directly correlates with how much federal power this state has.
What?
Huh?
I don't know, but Sarah's eyes got really big just then.
In terms of Congress? The only thing it could be in terms of Congress.
Well,
that's the federal power.
We might lose congressional seats.
Yeah.
I think it was sardonic.
That's what I thought.
I think it was a sardonic
What's
letter.
What's that?
Read it again.
Okay, yeah. There was just a moment, I don't know if you heard it, Alan. There was just a great moment where you asked this question, and then for some inexplicable reason, Libby's phone just said, that's what I thought. Okay. So Libby's phone agrees with you, Alan.
Yeah.
Good morning, panel. As a conservative living in New York State, I have no reason to answer the census, considering the fact that the census directly correlates with how much federal power the state has.
So what he's saying is, I don't want the state to have any more power.
Right.
That's what
he's
saying. I'm a conservative, and this is a liberal state, and therefore, I think I'm hearing it right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to answer it because I don't want them to have the power.
But I hope you don't want them to have bridges and tunnels either.
Yeah, but
that
it's
work.
So bizarre because it's the conservatives who want states' rights. I mean, it's just so bizarre.
Hey, come on. Don't confuse us with the facts.
I know. I'm sorry.
Okay. Then Ardell writes, I'm a citizen, but I intend to cross out the question. Thanks. Have a great day.
Well, that's an interesting question in itself. The census, our census guy around here, who's been doing it for years, is a wonderful liberal man. No question, you know, he's not gonna threaten anybody. But who do they report to? Who looks at the stuff, and what will the consequences of that be?
Mm-hmm. I think we need to think really hard about the role that we're all playing in ginning up some perhaps unnecessarily some additional fear around the census form. I mean, I think we really need to pay close attention before we engage in civil disobedience around the census. We could lose congressional seats.
Right.
We will. First of all, we're going to lose them now. We know that already. But we could lose more.
And how, this is a much larger question that I don't expect anyone to have a clear answer for, but how manipulative is, or how manipulatable is is the data already, in the sense of when you get the data that you can pretty much do what you want with it anyway?
The Trump administration has a record, we know, of either hiding or distorting data with which it disagrees. So I think that's a viable question, too. Sarah's right that we don't know how we should resist yet. But the idea of being open to civil disobedience on the census, I'm ready. I'm listening.
To what end?
To what end?
Question.
Exactly. I want to know what we're ending up with before I make a decision.
The thing is that when people started pushing back and resisting this question, it wasn't about civil disobedience around the census. It was about the racism of the question.
Right.
And so all the talk about civil disobedience and what I personally am or am not going to do takes away from the crux of the issue here is that this is a racist question. This is a racist government that we've got. This is a racist president. And they want to make this country not great again, but white again. And this is one of their ways of doing it.
Let's take a break. We'll be back and continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Rosemary Arameo, and Libby Post. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Rosemary Arameo, and Sarah Rogerson make up the panel this morning. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Listening to some beautiful music coming in. And it's Kittle & Company. That's the music we're playing from their new album, Whirls. And they're going to be at PS21 in Chatham. We've had a couple notes of saying, Who are you playing? Well, it's Jazz Swingin' the Songbook. It's co-presented with the Catskill Jazz Factory Friday, July 12th at 8 p.m., Saturday the 13th at 8 p.m., and you can find the playlist on wamc.org/roundtable. All right, let us get to some other topics. There are many other topics to discuss, so we will do so. Now, we've actually done pretty good today. We're making progress in our list. Jeffrey Epstein taken into custody in New York on new charges related to sex crimes involving minors. We'll get into why this story is important. Jeffrey Epstein, the well-connected multimillionaire who was sentenced to just more than a year in jail to resolve allegations that he molested dozens of girls, has been taken into custody in New York this over the weekend on new charges having to do with sex crimes involving minors, that according to a person familiar with the matter. The precise nature of the charges and how they differ from the previous allegations to which Epstein, now 66, pleaded guilty to in 2008 could not immediately be learned. His attorney, Martin Weinberg, did not respond to a request for comment over the weekend. A spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, where Epstein is expected to appear in federal court this week, declined to comment. The latest charges add a significant new wrinkle to the considerable political and legal saga surrounding Epstein. Is it Epstein or Epstein? Does anybody know for sure?
We'll hear.
Okay.
Yeah. FIFA or FIFA.
Okay. The wealthy...
Fo-fum.
The AP, Joe, just reported on what the charges are.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay, and the court documents...
Did the AP report on his last name?
No. They don't give a phonetic.
Okay.
Court documents unsealed Monday show Epstein is charged with creating and maintaining a network that allowed him to sexually exploit and abuse dozens of underage girls. The alleged victims were as young as 14 at the time. Authorities say he paid underage girls for massages and then molested them at his homes in Florida and New York in the early 2000s. He's expected to appear in Manhattan federal court later today. And again, messages were sent to his defense attorney seeking comment, and there was crickets on the other
side. What's really interesting about this is that as opposed to state charges, these are federal charges,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
I think that's very important. We have pictures of Donald Trump.
No kidding.
Being thrown up on the CNN screen ad nauseum with a quote about what a great guy he is because he likes young girls, as do I.
And there's a picture of Trump and Epstein and a young girl, and Trump is kissing the young girl.
But the irony, of course, is that it's a federal charge in order to get him, and here's the head fed basically defending the guy.
Well, yes, but yes. First of all, the guy who's now the labor secretary, Acosta.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? He was the federal prosecutor that cut the deal that gave Epstein basically a slap on the wrist. And
sure.
He says, well, at least he went to jail for a little while, but then they let him out. You know, so there's so much complicity around Epstein with this administration that I think that this could be the thing that possibly brings Trump down.
Ugh, nah. No way.
Oh, I do.
Nah.
No way. As a Trump supporter, I'm thinking, oh, they're going after him again. They couldn't get him with Mueller. Now they're going to try this. It's all baloney. He could kill somebody on 2nd Avenue and get away.
No, 5th Avenue.
Second, too, and get away with it.
It's all according if it's a
uptown,
a really,
downtown.
Yeah, well-heeled Republican. But I don't know. I mean, this is going to make it... If Falwell and Graham stand up next to him and support him, this will rip apart the right. the radical Christian right.
You're dreaming. I wish you were right, but you're dreaming. Literally.
I'm with Rosemary.
And he's going to, and also it's a federal crime. There's pardon power in here.
Well, that's the other thing. If
and
he's going to pardon.
Yeah, Trump's not opposed to pardoning very good people like his friend.
Well, Jeff. You know, Rosemary, on that one, I think I disagree. I think he, at this stage of the game, he's getting too close to 2020 to take that kind of a chance.
I mean, because then the women, just imagine what would happen if he pardoned Epstein. You know, the women's vote would come out to a point where it's just beyond.
Oh, my God. Trump doesn't care about the women's vote, Libby.
I know, but I'm talking about throwing him out of office.
Yeah. White women elected him. White women can get him out.
Right. Yes. There will be some of his base that will stick with him. And then there will be some of those Christian right people who will possibly find their moral center. The problem is we have a president without a moral center. And he thinks this kind of behavior is just fine.
I agree on that. However, we have 44% now of the population who thinks he is doing just fine and the economy's booming. And this is just the media and his enemies out to get him.
And then classically, he decides that he's going to visit the detention facilities on the border on the same day that this news breaks.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Right. It's another diversion.
And by the way, what happened to his wife's campaign about Be Best?
Oh, God.
Promoting children and
anti-bullying.
Better treatment, anti-bullying. Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, I want to point one other thing out that we're going to hear from in our letter writers. It isn't only Republicans who are standing with this guy.
No.
I mean, he's got a lot of Democratic friends, including Bill Clinton.
And if they all go down, they all go down. This is behavior that's beyond any kind of defense.
But...
Nah.
Okay.
Oh, Mom, we got kids in cages. That's beyond defense.
I understand that. I understand that. You know, all of this victimizing children is beyond defense. But you have this high-profile guy who got off with a slap on the wrist by one of Trump's appointees.
Senator Ben Sasse, a Republican of Nebraska, questioned how the Justice Department handled Epstein's case, said in a statement that he received a pathetically soft sentence last time and his victims deserved nothing less than justice. He added, justice doesn't depend on the size of your bank account. This billionaire can't be let out just because he can cut a bail check. The Justice Department needs to see this through.
And let us not underestimate the great misogyny still in this country. Those girls took money for massages, therefore, in the minds of many, they asked for it. They were teenagers, but they're old enough teenagers to know better.
14 years old?
Yeah. This is the same as the judge who gave that incredibly lenient sentence for a rape because he came from a good family.
That was
the perpetrator.
Horrible.
Yeah. Is that a lot different? It's the same mentality, and it's rife in our country.
And the fact, and you would know more about this. I know I'm skipping around here, but Rosemary started it. About the judge of...
he's a good guy. The rapist.
It seemed in that case that there was really no recourse to go after the judge. I mean, that you really can't do anything.
Well, public outcry. That's...
Well,
the swimmer, yeah, in California.
That judge got thrown off the bench.
That was an elected.
Yes, he was
position.
Elected.
I don't think this judge
was elected, he could get thrown off the bench.
I mean, there are still ethics panels, it's a process. It requires a complaint to be filed and an investigation, right? Like it just depends on the level of appointment. But
well, you know more about this than any of us. But a lot of these judges have such incredible power that they fall in love with their own voice after a while.
Yeah, that's for sure.
They say anything they want to say. And then all of a sudden they say, I should have said that. Yeah.
It's like politicians. It definitely draws a certain personality that finds that daily routine of power to be attractive. That's not all judges. There are certainly many, you know, really great judges,
many of which, Sarah, you have to appear before.
Yep, regularly,
and they're all the good ones.
Yeah, they're the great ones,
and all of them are wonderful.
Yeah, right. Okay,
and some of which I get you know, I work with. So
yeah, I'm not afraid to criticize to put criticism where it needs to be placed at all.
You know, even in this case of the judge with the lenient rape sentence, I'm the mother of sons, and I am a feminist, and I read about rape a lot, and I think our laws and our sentences are way out of whack. There are cases that, especially on college campuses, where alcohol is involved and consent is confused, and it's very difficult to argue them. Even sitting on a panel, I would acquit boys rather than send them to prison for
this
years
case,
and years and decades. But in this case...
This case was so heinous.
Yes.
For those of you who are not... And this happened right around 4th of July, so I'm going to repeat it in case anybody missed it. But a 16-year-old girl was visibly intoxicated when a drunk 16-year-old boy sexually assaulted her in a basement during a pajama party that was alcohol-fueled in the state of New Jersey. So the boy rapes her. And this is
the kicker.
He has cell phone video.
Yeah, that's the...
He texts it and posts it and says, when your first time having sex was rape.
Oh, my God.
So
he should go to jail. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's
but a
over.
Family,
but he has a good family.
But a family court said it wasn't rape. Instead, he wondered aloud if it was sexual assault. Defining rape as something reserved for an attack at gunpoint by strangers. He said the young man came from a good family, attended an excellent school, had terrific grades, and was an Eagle Scout. Prosecutors, the judge said, should have explained to the girl and her family that pressing charges would destroy the
His
boy's
reputation.
Life.
Oh, isn't that too bad? And what about the rape and how this is going to destroy this girl's life moving forward? I mean, you know, what this does is minimize the impact of rape on women.
All right, and now this was the question I was asking Sarah before. Now the judge has been sharply rebuked by an appeals court in a scathing 14-page ruling that warned the judge against showing bias toward privileged teenagers. Well, what good does that do? Stop being biased. What does that do?
I mean, it's starting to build the case that what he did was arbitrary and capricious, which is usually the standard to undo crappy opinions and unseat crappy judges.
And then the other thing is the comparison between sentences which are given out in these various cases. I mean, the NXIVM thing was disgusting. There's no question about it, the trial. But then you see a creep like this kid getting off, you know, with a slap on the hand, or Epstein getting off with a slap on the hand. It's really disgusting.
Well, we live in a rape culture where, you know, rape is not rape is not seen as serious, and boys will be boys. And
she asked for it. She was drinking.
And I'm sorry, Rosemary, but I have to disagree with you, you know? I mean, rape is a serious issue, and I've got a son, too. And it's about how we raise these boys to respect, whether we raise them to respect women or not. And, you know, men have to be held responsible for their presumption of being able to sexually abuse women.
I get it. Read any John Krakauer's book on rape, for example. And it is very confusing right now because due process is involved. Whether colleges get involved, for example, in these cases, is that really the same as the legal system? And the sentencing is extraordinary in cases where consent, not like this one, definitely not like this one or the swimmer case.
Well, it's like Justice Powell. I know it when I see it, when he's talking about pornography.
That's exactly true.
Well, but that's too subjective.
No.
It's too subjective because it's the women who end up on getting the bad end of the stick,
and
as
they
it
have
were.
For years.
You
and
know?
The pendulum is now swinging the other way. It's still not right, and this is why Me Too gets knocked when it shouldn't. It's like, oh, we're going crazy, Franken. Oh, we threw him out when he was not that bad a guy. We have lost perspective because the pendulum has swung the other way.
But
wow, has this become a feminist show today, Joe?
You talk about, but when you talk about college
What's
campuses,
wrong with that?
Right?
Nothing.
When you talk about college campuses. And we've got in New York the Enough is Enough law, which I was involved with getting put together. You know, the fact of the matter is Betsy DeVos is trying to take the teeth out of all of that on the federal level and letting boys be boys.
You know, I know this is slightly off only because Rosemary mentioned it, but the John Krakauer book, Missoula, which is about a rape culture in the University of Minnesota. And I was, not to add another layer to this, but he took a lot of, for want of a better term, crap. He took a lot of crap for how he reported that subject about acquaintance rape. Of getting the information about these
I
young
understand
women.
It. But the cases he used, like, to me, just explains the whole issue.
The book is amazing.
It is an amazing book, but it did not make me say, oh, my God, women are so totally, you know, they're in, help them, help them. There was one case where a young woman had a crush on a boy, invited him to her room. They drank together. She took off her blouse. They were messing around. They're watching TV. Her roommate's in another room outside their bedroom, and the boy goes too far, and she's at one at the final point of penetration. She goes no, and he goes really, and they do it, and then she drives him home, and she comes home, she doesn't say anything to her roommate, and the next day she tells her parents she was raped. I'm sorry, I would have a really hard time, even as the mother of sons, convicting that young man to 30 years in prison. Come on.
Once they say no,
Is
that what happened, Rosemary?
Yes, that was what Missoula. That
was one of that case.
In
that particular
book. You know, I mean, in the 70s, when women were first beginning to stand up against the rape culture, there was an acceptance of responsibility. If you drink too much and you're seductively dressed and you flirt with boys, you are asking for trouble. Now that's gone. Now women are saying, I can go out naked, nipples, free the nipples and all that, and men can't touch me if I say no.
I agree.
I think that's outrageous.
That's right. They shouldn't.
No, I don't.
Men shouldn't be able to touch women. It doesn't matter if I'm, not that they're going to touch me, but if you're walking down the street naked, that doesn't give anybody license to touch you.
No,
it doesn't. And no means no.
It doesn't give you license, but if you are, and it's not just walking down the street naked. Come on, let's be honest about this. This is like college parties, and there's flirting and sex going on, foreplay going on, and that is women have to take responsibility for that. Come on, that's not that big a deal.
Yes, and women say no.
I mean, I would raise my daughters, my granddaughters, to be better than that.
They say no, and the men don't take no for an answer.
They don't say no. That's read the book. The book.
Well, I think we need to have a more nuanced. A more nuanced conversation.
One other thing I wanted to say, and that is apparently Gillibrand is getting as much mail about a certain United States senator having to resign, Al Franken, than anything else. And that's why she hasn't broken. One of the reasons she hasn't broken out of the 0% point. There are people, you know, who say that was wrong, although he sure did quit.
Yep.
Well, and on the state level, what I'm really proud of are some of the initiatives that passed this year because of the Me Too movement, because of increased awareness around this, changing legal standards so that they aren't so impossibly high, which is the actual story. I mean, I know that there are anecdotes. I understand that there are always these stories that fall outside the norm. No laws can function perfectly because there's a lot of discretion in the system. But the fact remains, women are not privileged in that system. Mm-hmm. And the burden should not be on women to police other people's response, other people's behavior, based on how they present themselves to the world. We don't put that on boys. And I am raising two myself. And we teach each other. We teach them, your body is your body, my body is my body, and we respect each other's boundaries around that.
And you don't do anything unless you ask. That was my rule. You don't do anything unless you ask.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everyone for being with us. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post. Thank you all for being with us. We will return after this short break.